We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
I wish I could keep this feeling. I wish I could keep this feeling.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale. It is nice to be back. It's only been a couple days, Stray, but we got so much to talk about. Covered wrestling already. We already got our Patreon episode up. Shout out to everyone over there. Discord, everyone's joining. Looking forward to a fun weekend this weekend, but really, everyone's joining so we could chop it up and talk about WrestleMania next week. So the Discord is doing their thing. Everyone's having fun there. If you're not on the Patreon yet, rush over there. What are you waiting for? Join there. Chop it up with us. It's so much fun. Corner Club holding it down over there. But today it's about MMA. And the cards, we'll talk about last week's card. We'll talk about this week's card a little too. You got to run. You know, it's your son's birthday this weekend. You got to get out of here. Do some planning. But I am chopping it up, Chris Weidman. So me and Chris can sit down. It's crazy. I have the Chris Weidman Anderson Silva credential like over my shoulder. And it feels like yesterday. And then now it's like, Chris, you're going to retire? Or you what's going on here? And back then, I remember he was the new guy, yep. You know, tabbed to beat Anderson Silva. Can anyone stop Anderson? And he was the young kid trying to do that. Now we're looking at the end of his career. Shit, I had hair back then. You had no grays in a beard. Time is flying by. So we'll talk to Chris as well. Dre, we got to start with Dana. We got to start with everything else. But fun fact, you just alerted me to this. It is officially 9 years since we started the pod.
It's a long time.
It's a ton. Connor was beltless.
Yep.
We were covering Ronda Rousey regularly on that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting ready for Pacquiao Mayweather, both extremely active. So, yeah. And it was WrestleMania 31. So it's the year after WrestleMania.
So is that the year? What year is that?
The New Day had just become a thing.
Right. We torched them because they had that whole preacher promo and shit.
Yeah. No Kofi Mania. No Big E is champ.
Nope.
None of that. Heroes rock yet. Nope. 9 years ago, they had just become a thing.
Yeah. There was like Kirk Franklin. And
yeah.
It was terrible. Man, to think about how long ago that was. Bro, 9 years ago. Yeah. Like Mayweather was active. Pacquiao was active. Ronda was active. Connor was just getting started. 9 years ago, let me try to put this into more perspective. 9 years ago, well, shit, LeBron was still like 10 years into his career.
At 9 years ago, he had just gone back to Cleveland?
Somewhere, yeah.
Maybe. It was definitely in the run of Cleveland versus Golden State every damn year.
There was no Shield yet, was there? Or was there? Shield was around. Yeah, the Shield was around.
Shield was there.
My God.
It was deep.
To Pimp a Butterfly just came out.
Yep, that was our topic. The hot take that continues going.
Yeah. Damn, man. It's been a long time. 9 years, man.
UFC, the next number card we were preparing for was, let me make sure this date is correct. So, yep, we had just passed that. we were preparing and talking about UFC 186
Jesus.
at the time. Could you guess who headlined that card?
186.
UFC 186.
Was it
I
in
don't even know
Vegas?
the city.
It
It
wasn't in
doesn't even
Vegas.
tell me the city.
'Cause 189 ended up being one of the best cards we had ever seen.
Yeah, it is the best card I've ever seen. And that's Conor and Mendez.
'Cause I had Rory and Robbie on it.
Yep.
186.
You would never guess, but you just did one hell of an impression of this guy on
Oh, is
Sirius
this?
Radio.
So wait, is this Demetrius John? It's not Cariasso, because Cariasso was like 178. Is it Horiguchi?
Demetrius Johnson versus Horiguchi is the fight we were preparing for during that podcast.
Wow.
Co-main, Rampage Jackson beat Fabio Maldonado.
Fabio Maldonado was the co-main event. What a
Michael
time.
Bisping won. John McDessie was on the main card. And Thomas Almeida opened up the pay-per-view, and we were high on Thomas Almeida.
Yeah, then he got smoked by Cody Garbrandt, and things ain't been the same for that gangster.
At all. That
Golly.
was the end of that. Yo, it's crazy to think that's how far back it was. Like on like the actual date, we had just covered Damian Maia headlining a UFC fight night with Amanda Nunes on that card. This is the card when we launched the week prior. So I guess we recapped it. Damian Maia won and he just backpacked for 5 rounds. But 4 fights down the card, Amanda Nunes knocked out Shayna
Pro wrestler.
Baszler. Pro wrestler, Shayna Baszler. And she's been wrestling forever. NXT stint, everything. Was active in the UFC, knocked out by Amanda Nunes. Gilbert Burns submitted Cowboy Oliveira the fight before
Wow.
that.
That's wow. Yeah, it's a long time, man. Like, people's careers have started and ended while we've done this podcast.
Easily.
Like,
So
jeez.
many. Yo, it's wild to go back and see Dustin Poirier fought what would be the week after we debuted, and he was barely on the main card. He beat Diego Ferreira.
Yeah, he is coming off that loss to Connor. He got knocked out by Connor at 178. And then shortly thereafter, like, he started to become Dustin Poirier. And now look, years later, he's 2-0
Asking for a
against
title
Connor.
shot. Yeah, beat Connor twice. Came up short for the title twice, interim champ, and he's in position to fight the champ again. He's calling for it on social media 9 years later.
Incredible.
So, yo, crazy how much stuff changes between now and then. Some things, Dre, stay exactly the same. And I would say that's Dana White. And Dana is announcing a ton of fights. One thing that didn't change from then to now is the number of cards. We always thought maybe the frequency would change. This was pre-ESPN deal, I believe. Like they weren't even there. UFC Fight Pass was still kind of the thing. And we were guessing, like, what is the future for the UFC? The future is Dana White. Out of everyone who's come and gone, Dana White has remained as influential, if not more, in the realm of UFC and MMA.
Yeah, he's been the biggest star of the company. He knew what he was doing. So I actually say it's not even the same. I think he's gotten worse. Because he wasn't doing the Republican National Convention. He wasn't back then. Dana was
Damn, Trump's
still,
run was the year after this. This was
yeah,
pre-Trump.
this is pre-Trump. This is around the time that I want to say Dana White was highly critical of Matt Mitrione talking about Fallon Fox. And he was like, you know, this is her personal life. You don't talk about those things, blah, blah, blah. This is Dana White when he was trying to, you know, don't say that and we'll fire you. Now it's, you can
Yeah.
do whatever the fuck you want. He's
I
different now.
mean, it sold already. He got the check. Got paid. Say whatever the hell you want now. That's between you, Endeavor, and Disney. Like this, I'm out of it. Whatever they want to do, they can do. But Dana doesn't care anymore. He's literally, it's his focus is the fights. Outside of that, like the hoopla outside of it, like he's the face of the company, but he's not ruling with an iron fist per se. He's just like, yo, we're gonna put on these fights. You don't want to fight? F you. If you want to fight, thank you. I'll sing your praises. If you want to step in on 3 days' notice, I love you. And then
Right.
that's how, he runs things nowadays. But also this week, he said he can't trust the media, hates the media. And he said this on a podcast, or I guess a full ass show. It's like 2 hours long. Sage Steele, who had no clue she was speaking to Dana White,
She thought she was talking to Joe Rogan, and
to Joe Rogan the whole time.
there's so many things that jumped out to. I mean, obviously the Joe Rogan mistake is one, but Dana White has decided that he has zero interest marketing to a new audience. So his game plan is, I'll just talk to the people I want to talk to who aren't going to question me about shit. I'm just going to say what I want to say when I want to say it. I believe there's some interview, and it might not even be Sage, it might be somebody else, where there's like total revisionist history of what how the UFC came to be and the Fertittas and his involvement in it. But now he gets to tell the stories unchallenged. Nobody gets to ask a question because he hates the media. Well, yeah, you hate people that are going to question you. Look, man, Dana is, he's a good businessman. I'll give him that. I will always commend him for his focus on fights. Like, that's one thing that he has been adamant about, making the best fights that he can. Sometimes he slips, but he's better than most when it comes to putting fights together. But he's so full of shit on so many other levels that is like really frustrating to see. And now the idea that he hates the media, and it really became out of the pandemic when he really started to hate the media because everybody questioned him about going to Tai Chi Palace and putting on these shows. And well, like one thing I want to get a chance to ask him is like, why are you still doing shows with the Apex? I know why.
It's cheap.
Exactly. It's cheap labor. It's cheap. There's no real overhead. Like Rose Namajunas and Eunice just fought in an Apex with like 50 fans, right? It's for television. Like the reality is it should be back on the road. So I don't understand what Dana White thinks this is these days. I think he is still trying to figure out how the media can be his best friend. So Dana White wants the media to be his friend, and if you're not his friend, you're his enemy. And if you're not telling his story, he don't like you. So none of this shit is a surprise to me.
No, none at all. It's just the evolution of Dana. We'll see how long he wants to go. Like, is he going to be Vince McMahon legacy act? Is he just going to be like, all right, 10 years? It's different now because he still has like homies, right? Like he still has fighters that he really likes. There's friends. Yeah, Cowboy Cerrone's gone, but there's still like, he really likes Gaethje. He really likes a couple of these fighters. But as you go on, the distance between you and them grows. Like you're not super chummy with Sean O'Malley. I think he tried to go on Sean's podcast and like they did a podcast, but they're not like close buddies. So sooner or later, you're going to be the old man in the room. It's like, do you want to do that? Do you want to be Vince McMahon? Do you want to be Bob Arum? Do you want to just be the boss? Because so much of what's predicated on now is like, I'm cool. Like I'm still doing my thing. Like, everyone wants to see me, no matter what you are, who you are. Very few people want to see you if you're 50, 60, 70 years old in front of a camera every damn week, announcing stuff on TikTok and Instagram. Like stuff will pass you by. So it's interesting to see what he grows into. For now, he's announcing shit on Twitter and TikTok and social media, and he's, the front man for the UFC. It's very hard to scoop him now. I'm not sure if Ariel even really tries. I'm not sure if anyone else is really plugged in enough to go and try to scoop Dana. I mean, occasionally Dana will fuck up and post a giant board in UFC facilities that has every matchup for like the next 3 months and spoil himself. But outside of that, he has all the power in terms of how to break these things. So we get an announcement that we know the UFC Saudi Arabia card is now done. He announced that. And top to bottom, a pretty damn good card, headlined by Robert Whittaker versus Hamzah.
It's a damn good fight. I mean, it's much better than the card that they originally tried to do in Saudi Arabia, and they had to cancel it. So they needed to add star power. It's going to be on ABC. It's not a pay-per-view. And, headlining Chimaev versus Whittaker, which is obviously going to be a number one contenders fight, which if Chimaev wins, well, just go ahead and give him the title. Because unless Adesanya comes back, which we'll talk about in a second, it feels like he might be on his way back. Like the announcement of this card later this summer feels like the perfect time for Adesanya and Dricus du Plessis. And if Kamaya fights Whitaker, which would be this card is what, June, July? When is this damn card? June, right?
This is, that's a good question. It
Pretty
is
sure like
June
June.
22nd.
Yeah, so if he fights in June, and if what I think is true, and Adesanya and du Plessis fight in August, then at the end of the year, you're going to get possibly Chimaev against Adesanya or du Plessis. Like, they're setting this up. They're setting up this middleweight, big middleweight title fight. But I mean, yeah, Saudi Arabia, I'm not shocked that they try to load this card up.
No, and honestly, it's not an easy fight by any form or
No.
fashion for Hamzat.
Nope. Nope.
So Robert Whittaker is looking at this like, this is my chance. It
Yep.
doesn't matter if Izzy holds the belt, who cares? I'm getting another shot at
Yep.
it. If Du Plessis holds the belt, even better. I think I can beat it. Like, then you go into it. But I mean, we haven't seen Hamzat lose, but we've seen him pushed.
Yeah, he got pushed
And
by Gilbert Burns. He got pushed real tough by Gilbert Burns.
When you look at Gilbert, when you look at Whitaker, Whitaker has all the tools to push Hamzat in that same way. So it's one of those things where that's great matchmaking. We'll see. It's in Saudi. We don't know if Hamzat can get a visa still to fight
Right.
anywhere else. So he's kind of like stuck fighting over there. And that's one hell of a matchup and announcement for them. Outside of that, UFC 300's right around the corner. Just put in my credential app for that. Shout out to them getting back to me quick. So I'll be in the building. You might be in the building. UFC 300, it is here in Vegas. That is, building up nicely. So the UFC is kind of rolling, but now it's one of those things where the divisions are going, everything's turning. But when we have dates for select things, but it's just like, where's the star power again? Now we know Izzy might not return till August. That's your biggest star. Are we counting on John for International Fight Week?
I honestly don't know. I mean, look, we didn't even talk about it, but UFC 300 is loaded with like great fights and former champions. UFC 301 sucks, and that's a pay-per-view. Like that the Saudi card on ABC is free, and it is so much better than 301, which is headlined by Pantoja versus Steve Ercik, who is ranked 10th in the flyweight division.
That
Ercik,
officially going to be the headliner?
yes. So that's your main event. Steve Ercik, number 10. Like, there was a time where the flyweight division was gonna get shut down, and then Henry Cejudo came along and they traded DJ, and then Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo, they took that to new heights. But now we're getting Pantoja versus Ercik. Ercik is 3-0 in the UFC. He's ranked 10th, and he's headlining a pay-per-view. And the co-main event, they were like, oh, we need a big
Something.
fight. Jose Aldo's back against
You
Jonathan Martinez. Like, what the fuck is this card? This
don't
card
have
is
to
garbage.
jump into USADA anymore. It's like, yo, you ready?
Man,
Get your ass in the cage.
this card stinks. It stinks for a pay-per-view. It's barely good enough for a fight night.
Yeah.
It
It
stinks.
it's one of those, yo, we gave y'all three cards in a row.
Yeah, they give us bangers.
Like two, at least two in a
Yeah.
row. Just banger, banger. You guys got to give us one.
Yeah, you're just gonna take the mulligan on this one. Like, if you're paying, you just pay for it. You might as well say if you buy 300, you get 301 for half off. Because that's
Yo,
how
that'd be
bad
one
this
hell
card
of a
is.
deal.
This card is not great, but it leads you to ask the question, like when you mentioned star power, what are they doing this summer? Conor McGregor obviously doing the media runs for Roadhouse, and he keeps saying, oh, I got the green light. It's time to go. And every time Conor says something, Dana's like, ain't no deal. Ain't nothing happening. And they don't, and I've said this before, like they don't need Conor McGregor back, but they would like to have him back. And I don't know what the holdup is. I feel like it's money, but it may not be. And Chandler's just sitting there getting old. Like he can't even get a fight. He has to go on Monday Night Raw and say, come on, Conor. Everybody like, who the fuck is that guy?
Because they're just waiting him out, like just waiting for doing the Ultimate Fighter against Conor is like the worst thing because it trapped him on that show. And then now it's like you are Conor McGregor's opponent. But if we
Yeah.
don't let him fight, then you ain't doing shit.
Like Chandler's stuck. We don't know when Conor's coming back. We don't know if he's coming back. It's going on almost 3 years now. And it's crazy to think we've lost Conor's best year, prime years. They're gone. Like it's Conor hasn't won a unless you count Donald Cerrone. who was like in the lower end of the lightweight division. Conor hasn't won a meaningful fight since around the time we started this podcast.
No, that's
Yes,
not true.
it is true. Look at it.
Because he beat Mendez, beat Aldo. We did an emergency show. So that's a year after we started this.
Around the time we
Then
started, 2015.
he fights Floyd?
No,
No, Floyd's there.
he
Then
fought Nate.
he fought Nate on late notice instead of RDA, loses, comes back, beats Nate.
That don't count as nothing.
Beats Eddie Alvarez for the title that November after. So that's November 2017.
2016.
November 2016.
I'm
Yeah.
pretty sure it's 2016.
November 26th. So, yeah, that's
That's
about
the
right.
last meaningful fight he won. Think about that.
It's about to be 8 years.
8 years. 8 years since his last meaningful fight, which means 8 years
What was he
ago,
like, 26 years old? The last time you won a meeting?
he was
He's wasted a lot of time.
27 years old. He's
Yeah.
35 now. He turns
Wow.
36 in July.
He just wasted almost a decade,
All of
but
his
made a
prime years.
shit ton of money.
Oh
Fuck.
yeah,
Like, why not?
he made earth-shattering money. And me and Big Mac Ryan McKinnell had this debate on Sirius the other day about Conor's career, and is I'm trying to figure out how we were framing it, because my argument was that Conor is Mike Tyson. They're the same person. Like, when you stack them up against other fighters, they're not really that good. They made a ton of money. They were good fighters. But that whole greatest of all time conversation that people have about Mike Tyson was like, did you watch any other heavyweights in your life? Tyson wasn't the best heavyweight. He was in a relatively weak era. He lost to Buster Douglas, got ran over by Evander Holyfield, and then he just fell off a cliff. Conor McGregor had
80s
a.
Tyson was pretty good, but yeah, he wasn't
He
beating
ain't
world
fighting
people.
nobody. He fought Michael Spinks, who was a blown up light heavyweight. Trevor Burbick was. Everybody was scared to death. Just like
Everyone.
Conor McGregor got it into everybody's head. It was the moment that Nate Diaz was like, fuck that shit. Everybody realized, like, oh, he may not. He's beatable. And his career has never been the same. So when we talk about, I think Conor's the greatest businessman we've ever had in the UFC. But how great is he really? He beat Jose Aldo, which is the feather in his cap. Before he beat Jose Aldo, he beat Chad Mendez on short notice. And Chad, broken foot, rolling off the couch, completely gassed in the second round. You know who he beat before that? Dennis fucking Seaver.
Yeah, but he also beat Max Holloway
We
and
can't talk
Dustin
about my.
Poirier.
We can't talk about a 10-year-old Max Holloway, man. We can't.
I'm just saying the names are there. He beat Poirier, he beat Holloway. He beat Holloway on one leg.
I'm just saying, Max Holloway wasn't old enough to drink when he fought
Wasn't.
him. He
Conor wasn't
wasn't.
much older.
So, but I think,
Conor
like,
was like 23.
when I look at Conor's career, the accolades don't match the aura. Like, the aura is like it's the same thing with Mike Tyson. Huge stars. But when you really break down that resume, it ain't really that great. It's okay. It's good. He's a world champion who never defended his titles, either of them. He
Yeah.
became a champ, but what does it really mean? He beat Eddie Alvarez, who nobody thought was a great champion. That was his first title defense. He didn't fight RDA. He lost to Nate Diaz, where it all goes downhill from there. He gets
That's an ugly loss.
completely gets run over by Khabib, even though people was like, well, at least he won a round. All right, whatever. Still got ran over. And then he lost to Poirier twice. And then he beat Cerrone in between, who Cerrone was clearly in his washed-up era and just trying
Yeah.
to cash a check.
I guess Cerrone fights people just say, like, yo, one time he broke his ankle. The other time he got starched.
He got stars, but even in that second fight, Poirier was getting to him right before he broke his ankle.
Yeah.
Like, he stepped back and broke his ankle. Poirier was going to knock him out again. So it's like the levels. The worst thing Conor did ever did in his career was box. That was it.
Yep.
It
It
was
changed his
really over with.
entire style. It made him fat and happy
Yep.
with a ton of money. And, but he knew that from the jump. Like,
I ain't mad at it. I get it. I don't even like on that level, none of that shit matters to me, because when people, if you want to criticize Conor, I was like, dude, he did what was best for him. He's fucking disgustingly rich. I have nothing against any of that. It's when people talk about his greatness and I'm like, greatness in the octagon or greatness out the octagon? Because he's been great out the octagon as a businessman. He just did Roadhouse. He some director somewhere is going to give him another villainous role somewhere. He'll probably be acting again. Like, he doesn't need to fight anymore, which I know for the UFC, they're not in dire straits. They don't really need Conor to come back. They could use him. They don't need him. If the business was in a downturn, then it'd be like, hit the bat phone, call Conor, let's get this big fight. But once
Like
you
they did
break,
against Poirier.
right, but once you break that emergency glass to bring Conor back, you have to be prepared for him to lose. Because that's it. Once he loses again, it's over.
Yeah. I mean, but it's over now if he never fights. So
True.
it's one of those things where if he beats Chandler, okay, now we can we know we're at the end of the rope for this golden goose. But how much can we milk out until he loses?
There's really not much left. Like, Conor's at the end of his career. And the more I look at his career and think about how good he was, like, he was great for like a year and a half. Like, he was on fire. He did everything right. He took every fight imaginable.
Yeah.
Like, he
He
was
had
like,
a
I'll
good
fight him.
2, 3 year run
I
with
mean,
a
I don't
short
really
chin.
like, he knocked out Marcus Brimage. Like, the Dennis Seaver knockout, I don't know what to call that, right? Like, Poirier, he completely talked Poirier out of his game. He did the right thing. Dynamite left hand. Poirier, Seaver, Mendez, Aldo. That was it. That was it. That's four fights. And he's had a better career than like everybody
And
fighting
you
four.
skip Brimage. But yeah, sure.
Yeah, Brimage was like first. That was his debut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then he tore his knee
Then he
against.
fought Holloway. Then he was on the sideline. I can make the argument, but not quite yet. I'm very close to it, that Sean O'Malley may already have a better career than Conor McGregor.
He doesn't have a Jose Aldo.
That's my only thing. If he beats Merab, then I'll say okay, because that means you beat Aljo, then
Marab's great. Aljo's good. Neither of them are Jose Aldo.
oh, but I'll say it like this: O'Malley, if he were to beat Merab, Petr Yan, and Aljamain Sterling, I'll take those three wins over Conor's win over Aldo. Even though Conor's win over Aldo was fucking phenomenal, O'Malley's now defended the belt twice.
That's fair, but I would take
And the resume outside of Aldo?
Conor's Aldo and Eddie Alvarez complete fucking schooling over that. Because whatever you say, whatever it is in revisionist history, Eddie Alvarez was a really good fighter in another promotion for a very long time, came, beat the champion outright and clear as day. And RDA was really good at that point. And Eddie Alvarez was fed to Conor. It was
Yeah,
a
but
perfect style matchup,
he got
but.
talked out of it. Just like everybody else. Conor talked so much shit to him, Eddie didn't know what to do. It's true. Like, that's what I'm saying. O'Malley, I feel like, is a fight or two away, but when the resumes are stacked up, like, if O'Malley keeps doing what he's doing, like, he knocked out Aljamain Sterling. Aljo was a really good bantamweight champion. Like, he got by Petr Yan, which Yan was the champion. He's already got more champions on his resume than Conor.
Yeah, what was Jose Aldo's rank all time at the point when Conor knocked him out?
Oh
He was
no,
like the third greatest fighter ever.
he was remarkable. Like,
Yeah.
it's
He
funny,
hadn't lost in like 10 years, like something stupid.
the funny thing about Jose Aldo, and it is something I may have talked about on this podcast, even though, because I thought Aldo was gonna win, he was like, heading into that fight, he wasn't that beast Jose Aldo coming out of WEC.
No,
He
he
was, he
stopped the
was,
kicks.
he stopped throwing the leg kicks. He wasn't destroying people like he was. Like, he was murdering Mike Brown, Uriah Faber. Like, Uriah Faber's thigh was mincemeat in that fight.
Poor Uriah Faber.
Like, Chad Mendez, when he gave him the up knee at the end of the first round, the second round. Like, that version of Jose Aldo was incredible. And then he started to coast.
Yeah.
And he
Fought
ran
not
into,
to lose the belt.
yep, and he ran into somebody who talked him out of his game and just ran him into a left hand, which is one of the most phenomenal things we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And Conor,
Probably the greatest moment in the sports history. Like
I mean, it
single
was,
greatest in excuse me, in that promotion system.
yeah, it turned the corner for Conor. Like, it was that particular, like, he was already a star, but beating Jose Aldo in that fashion and
Yeah.
basically calling it the entire time was unreal. But then it was just like, after that, I'm like, all right, like, losing to Nate Diaz wasn't great. And I know
No.
people will go, oh, he went
But
up.
they love a comeback.
Yeah, they love a comeback, but bro, he's good. But like, when we talk the greatest of all time conversation, he's not top 10. Yeah, I don't think he's top 20.
I
But I'd say
don't.
Chris Weidman had a better run
He had
as
a
middleweight
run.
champion. right?
Chris had a run though.
Like,
And
why been
he also beat a goat.
like he beat Anderson Silva twice, even
Twice.
though he broke his leg. But then he beat
Whatever.
Lyoto Machida. Like, he was dogging people. Lyoto Machida, Vitor Belfort. Like, Weidman was dogging people as the middleweight champion.
Yeah.
Kind
Who
of
got
never
him?
had that run.
Got him out of here. Luke Rockhold?
Luke Rockhold got him out of here.
Yeah, Luke was supposed to be that dude. I don't know what the hell. The
You know what happened to
chin
Luke?
went and that was it.
The fool got arrogant against Michael Bisping. Talking
Never
about he's
recovered.
going to kill him and got smoked.
Got
Never
knocked
been
out
back.
every single fight since then.
Yeah, he's fighting on Karate Champions against, I can't remember who.
I forgot. Someone just mentioned this to me like yesterday. I think my trainer at the gym. It was
Funny
like, yo,
how
he's fine. It's like, wow.
the mighty fall. So yeah, in the pantheon of all-time greats, Conor's not really on that list. It's just like Tyson, and when people talk about he's the greatest heavyweight, he ain't top 10.
No, he's not as great as we remember, but he's not as bad as you're saying.
No,
Like
he's not bad. I'm just saying, when you look at the top 10, like, is he better than Lennox Lewis? No. Is he better than Klitschko? Either of them? No. Is he better than Ali, Frazier, George Foreman?
No,
No.
heavyweight division stack.
That's what I'm saying. So he
Conor
falls
in
to the top 10.
MMA, he's not better than.
Conor's not
He's
better
not
than
top
Usman.
10.
No, he's not better than Usman. He's not better than Weidman. He's not better than Anderson. He's not better than John Jones,
GSP,
Khabib. Like,
Habib, like it's
you're going on the list.
DC. There's a lot of really good champions.
That's my thing. It's like, Adesanya, like, you go down the list.
Career wise, he doesn't have the career of Jose Aldo, even though he starched him.
No, he doesn't have that career. Like, I mean, shit, he doesn't have Frankie Edgar's career.
No. And you know,
Like,
Frankie Edgar doesn't do it for him.
but, you know,
That was hot take number three when we started this show.
he's not better than Demetrius Johnson. He
No.
didn't have a better career than Henry Cejudo.
Oh. No.
Cejudo, no, he
Cejudo
didn't.
beat DJ.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, when you really put it in perspective, it's
That's
like, damn, well, how
close.
good was Conor? He was
Yeah.
better. Was Conor's career better than Tyron Woodley's?
I don't think Woodley has an Aldo. And Woodley gave a st stinker against Wonderboy once.
And then he won it, but then he knocked out, like, he
No, it
beat
was a
Terrence.
great fight against Wonderboy and then a stinker
Yeah,
the second
then the
time because you're
stinker.
scared to death.
But you remember he snuffed out Robbie Lawler in,
Robbie
like, in
Lawler.
a round when Robbie was on fire.
It's close.
So
That's about Conor's range.
that's close, right?
Yeah,
But he's not.
he's not Dominic Cruz.
No, it's Conor's greatness is it's and this is just the UFC.
Is he Volkanovski? He's not
He's
Volkanovski.
not Volk. Volk is better than him.
Fuck. Petr Yan is not as good as Conor.
No, Petr Yan is not.
Jan had a run,
He had a
but
nice run, but
he's
he
not as
wasn't as
good.
good. He wasn't
Yeah,
as good.
we found like the
Like, I
Conor
mean,
range.
what, like, where do we put him? Gaethje?
Woodley-esque.
Like,
Now get
Gaethje?
no, that's bringing in other stuff from a different promotion. That's tough.
I
Because
mean,
if you
even.
bring everything Justin Gaethje's been through, he's better than Conor.
Right, but even in the UFC, right? Like, he's beat Poirier. He's 1-1 against Poirier. He dogged Tony Ferguson. He lost to Khabib. Conor lost to Khabib. It's like they're, like, kind of on par. And Khabib, I mean, Gaethje's never been the champ.
No.
Like,
Is he?
would you say Poirier's had a better overall career than Conor in
Yeah.
terms of in ring?
Hands down.
It's crazy.
Hands down. It's not even close. Yeah. Islam is better than him already.
Charles Oliveira.
Yeah. Charles might have had a little better of a run. Maybe.
I mean, Charles was
I mean, he
dogging
has the
him.
most finishes ever. And that's like in the whole UFC history and most
It's
submissions in UFC
that's
history.
what I'm saying. It
Like
gets real,
that's.
spooky when you
It's a
really start
resume.
to break down Conor's career. You go, damn, where does he sit in
You
terms
know
of
why?
wins?
Like a lot of these guys had a second win,
Yes.
right? Like they hit their second wind and built upon. Even Gaethje took his two losses or whatever, hit the second win. He's building on it. Poirier took his losses, hit his second win, building on it. Holloway lost, cool. He's hit a second win and he's adding to what was already a great career. Charles Oliveira didn't have a first win. He had a second wind, and that shit carried him,
Took
and
off.
it became amazing, right? So everyone kind of had these growing pains, came back, refocused, did their thing. Conor never even tried to do that. He never
Nope.
tried to refocus, be serious, and sit in this. He had enough money and liquor and whatever else that he was just like, my first win was good enough. because he had the talent to have a second win. It just I don't think he wanted to.
Ooh, you know what that sounds like? Mike fucking Tyson.
They
Think
kept
about it.
raiding his ass out, and then Lennox was just like, all right, I'm enough of this.
Well,
Enough
you
of this
gotta.
sideshow.
So it was Tyson lost to Buster Douglas after going like 37-0. Then he lost to Buster.
Yeah.
Then,
Prison.
well, yeah, he did prison because he beat Razor Ruddock twice, and then he was supposed to fight Holyfield. Then he went to prison. He came out, fought a bums, Buster Mathis. I'm looking at Peter fucking McNeely, Bruce Seldon, who was like in shock as soon as Tyson got to the ring. Then he lost to Holyfield twice. So he
Yeah.
won a few fights against a few bums. Then this is the rest of his career. He knocks out Francois Botha. Orlin Norris went to a no contest because I believe it was a Tyson headbutt. Julius Francis, who? Lou Severace, who? No contest against Andrew Gallata because Tyson failed a drug test. Brian Nielsen, who the fuck is that? Then he loses. He gets knocked out by Lennox, beats Clifford Etienne, who wasn't there to do anything, then loses his last two fights to Danny Williams and Kevin McBride. That is Mike Tyson's career. That is Connor's career. There was never a real second run for either of these fighters. They were front runners. They had great first halves of their career where people thought they were destined to be the next big thing. And then the wheels fucking fell off and he never recovered.
Yeah, that's the comparisons are there. The comparison,
So,
it's Connor, though, didn't have to go through some of the troubles that Tyson did, where you could at least say, like, Tyson's skills were taken from him, because the prison stint, because of his mentor and trainer dying. Like, Tyson had some like built-in excuses.
yeah.
Connor just got money.
I mean,
Like,
Connor could have went to jail a couple times, right?
that is also true.
He had the outside of the ring antics, just like Tyson. Like he was accused of rape. That whole shit just kind of went away in Ireland. Like Connor, and this is almost a compliment. Connor, I could fully see him doing what Mike Tyson's doing right now with Jake Paul and make a ton of fucking money 20 years from now.
100%. He'll do that shit 3 years from now.
Because
The UFC's gonna get tired of him.
no other fighter has the allure of Conor McGregor, just like no other fighter has the allure of Mike Tyson
Yeah.
when
People
he's 50
watched
years old.
Roadhouse for Conor McGregor.
So as much as I talk about Usman and Khabib, like none of them are Conor in terms of the overall aura. We
Not at
think
all.
of them better than what they actually were. Good for both of them.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Man, that's tough. Connor's resume just broke down that whole shit. It's all bad. The perception of Connor, though, is ginormous. But damn, start
Amazing.
going through the stats. It's just like that Aldo win is holding weight
Carrying
on that
everything.
resume, carrying everything.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Before we bring Weidman in and let you get out of here and do your stuff, just real quick, touching on last week's card and the card to come. Last week, Thug Rose, big win for her. Dominated on the ground. Didn't even really do the stand-up. Use her stand-up as much.
Yeah, I don't know what Amanda Ribas was thinking with that headlock takedown shit. She kept doing it. And like Laura Sanko called it out in commentary. It's like, all she's going to do is adjust, and then she's going to take her back. Or she's going to get top position. Ribas just kept trying that shit.
It's like she saw the Poirier fight. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to just spam this like Poirier did. I'll eventually win.
But I mean, it's a good win for Rose. She's in an interesting spot because that women's flyweight division is pretty loaded right now. And a fight this weekend is probably going to determine the number one contender.
Yep.
So when people say what's next for Rose, to me, it's pretty obvious. It's Macy Barber. That's the fight to make in this division. Rose immediately jumps into the top five by beating Ribas. Barber's been on a roll. She's only 25, which means when we started this podcast, the girl was 16, right?
Yeah. Crazy.
So if the winner of Manon Farreau and Aaron Blanchfield is going to get the winner of Grasso and Shevchenko, and then the winner of that is going to fight the winner of what I would think would be Rose and who the hell was I talking about?
Blanchfield.
Yeah, no.
No,
Rose and Barber.
Macy Barber, yeah.
So, but I think the there was a time that this division was
stunk
because it was Shevchenko and everybody else.
Yep.
Now everybody's catching up. So good for Rose. I'm glad to see her back. Hopefully she fights more frequently. That's the main thing.
Yep. Stay active. But hey, honestly, she only has 19 fights in her career, but I feel like she's been fighting forever. So it's like the mileage, she might be at the point where you got to start like, all right, let's just make sure that we keep an eye on this. She's only 31.
She's a kid.
Yeah, she was young. So to put her in perspective of this podcast, she was 22.
Yeah, I think she was. Did she do the Ultimate Fighter already?
I think they had a championship already. She's her versus Cookie Monster, right?
Yeah, she's 0-2 against Carla Esparza. It's the wild.
Ridiculous. That's her kryptonite.
Yep.
She was running through people. Again, a stinker versus Carla Esparza. Still can't believe that fight. And Edmund Shabazian is back. Maybe shit's starting to click for him.
We always say it's not a young man's game. He looked good in getting this knockout, so maybe he's on point. Maybe Edmund's the guy that a lot of people thought he was 5 years ago. We shall see.
He learned a little bit of head movement. He's looking pretty good. And then we have the card coming up this weekend, which Atlantic City taking it on the road, not in Apex. I love that aspect of it. The card itself, all right. I mean, again, probably most intriguing fight is Chris Weidman and then the number one contenders fight for women's flyweight. But Weidman, Bruno Silva, it's a fight. If Weidman is 100% healthy, he could win. And I'm going to ask him this. I'm like, are you putting down the gloves no matter what? Because it's a fight where if he loses, I think he drops the gloves. If he wins, I'm not sure there's a better career ending story than coming back from two bad leg injuries and back-to-back fights, fighting all the way back, fighting in front of all your friends and fam, because the hop, skip, and a jump from Long Island and Sarah Longo, where you started your career and all that, everybody's going to come out and watch you, and your kids are there, your wife is there. How do you not retire in front of that crowd that's going to be going nuts for you? Unless you, for some reason, milk it and get on that. Like, if he wins, then he'd be like, fuck it, I'm going to retire my next fight, and you fight in MSG.
I mean, it just sounds like, from everything I've heard from the Weidman camp where he's talking about, man, they say I could be a world champion again. I was like, man, don't y'all feed him that. Don't have him believe in that shit. Because the danger in doing that is Chris Weidman tries to do the things that the old Chris Weidman did, and you can't do the things the old Chris Weidman did. You have to be the new Chris Weidman. You have to be a different fighter. I think a lot of fighters try to be who they once were. Like, use this with like Adrian Broner and Zab Judah and boxing, and Anderson Silva, at some point, you ain't the same. Roy Jones, you have to adjust your game. If Weidman can do that, I still don't think he'll be champion. We'll be better. Yeah. But if he's like, I could beat anybody in the world, it's like not doing that stuff in 2024.
That athleticism is probably gone. Go back to your fundamentals. Wrestle.
Yeah. Wrestle, grapple. Like, I mean, the dude has never truly used his jiu-jitsu. Like, he was winning grappling tournaments before he came. And there was a lot of things that we thought Weidman was going to use against Anderson Silva when they fought. Yeah. And he didn't even have to pull out the bag. So, I think, I mean, that's not my most interesting fight on the card. I like that fight because I need to see what Weidman has left. But I'm really interested in Vicente Luque versus Joaquin Buckley. Somebody going to hell in that fight.
Joaquin Buckley is just funny.
He's a maniac, but these two like to knock people out. Yeah. And for that to be the co-main event, it makes sense because of the violence. Now, obviously, Ferrell and Blansfield is a fight everybody wants to see for a number of reasons. Blansfield's the uncrowned queen of this division, but Ferrell is that kryptonite.
Yeah.
Like, Blansfield's not a great striker. And Ferrell was a phenomenal striker who put it on Rose Namajunas in the
striking everybody
department.
So far. Everybody. So she's a problem.
The only problem with this is, I don't know if you saw Ferrell this morning, had a brutal weight cut.
Oh, my gosh. She gaunt doesn't even describe it.
Looked emaciated.
Yeah, like she couldn't fake a smile. Because her muscles wouldn't lift her lips high enough.
I was going to call the 1-800 number and make a donation for hungry kids. That's when I saw her. I was like, oh, this kid needs food. Somebody needs to feed this little girl.
I was like, how do you let her step on the scale?
She looked awful. So if she can't hydrate, she got 36 hours. If she can't hydrate and get a strength back, Blansfield's going to ragdoll her ass. She looked so bad on that scale.
Being in a main event helps, I guess.
You got time.
Because you got more time than everyone else to rehydrate.
That way.
But, oh my God, Blansfield smiling, looking happy, flexing, all nice on the scale. And Ferrell, she's like, oh, just why am I here, right? Like, let me just fight, please. Like, why do I cut weight? She's looking at 35 like, they are food up there. What am I doing?
I know, it's an easier division. Get out of here. You can't make this weight.
What am I doing?
Like, you could beat Raquel Pennington tomorrow.
Easy. So it's like, yo, what am I doing right now? Why am I cutting this weight? I feel like that's the realization, like, I'm cutting all this weight in what is a number one contender's fight, or should be. But then I still got to make this weight again for a title fight. If I win the title, I got to keep doing for what?
For what?
I'm out of here. Win, lose, draw. I'm out of here. Let me face the number one contender. Make one up at 135, because Lord knows who that is.
Irene Aldana?
Maybe. Juliana Pena?
Myra Bueno Silva? Like, I don't know.
I'll Julia take any of them.
Is probably the number one, but it feels like Pena's getting that title fight.
Title shot, yeah.
Yeah, so pick one. I think Ferrell can beat almost anybody in that division.
Exactly. You give me anyone else besides Pena, and I'm fighting them next, because I'm not even waiting for the title shot. I'd be Aaron Blanchfield, but she can have it. She's still next.
Yeah, I don't.
And then I'm gone.
That's savage. That she looked awful.
Looked bad. So that's, we'll see. Five round fights. It's really the gas tank, because the striking may look good early, but if Blansfield takes her down round 3, 4, 5, you'll be tired as hell. And that's where this weight cut comes in. So it's a toss up fight, 50-50 fight for me. But yeah, on the scale, and they always say, don't judge it by what you see at the weigh-ins or, you know, at the press conference. Shit. So Blansfield, I think, wins this, because I don't see her getting knocked clean out. And that means Ferrell needs a gas tank to go 25, not 15. And it's tough when a weight cut was like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I think best case scenario has happened for Aaron Blanchfield. Like, you take advantage of this now. You put her ass on the ground and you tire her out immediately. So we'll see how that all plays out. Right now, though, we're going to let you go. I'm going to connect, bring Chris in on the Zoom, chop it up with him. Thank you, everyone, for listening as always. To me and the old man, still a great interview to come. Shout out to everyone on Patreon. Don't go anywhere. Me and Chris Weidman right after this. All right, everyone, as promised, I am here. I think it's okay to say this with UFC legend Chris Weidman. You know, I don't want to age you or anything. You came in, you are the future of the UFC. I think you've accomplished everything someone would say that anyone would want in a UFC career. So it's okay to call you a legend now, but it seems like you still got a little ways to go. That fire is still burning.
Yeah, I mean, somehow I still have crazy motivation, and I still feel like I have it. So I don't feel like it's time to hang up the gloves yet. I was prepared to hang up the gloves on this one when I got a call, because I was kind of like, you know, I broke my leg in my last fight too. You know, I was dealing with the recovery. It was just a lot. And I'm like, man, this is terrible. Maybe I'm good. And then they called me for a fight, and it was Atlantic City. I go, you know, that's where I started my career, you know, undefeated in Atlantic City. You know, at the time when I was coming up, there was no MMA in New York. It was illegal. MMA, was the last state for MMA to be legalized in was New York. So all my early fights had to be in New Jersey. And so to be able to go back and come to Atlantic City where it all started, where I won my first title, was awesome. I was like, you know, it'd be a cool place to lay down the gloves. But then, man, I started feeling good. I started, like, my body started really, like, coming together. I talked about it a little bit, but, you know, I have this all natural supplement that I take that helps with the anti-inflammation, with the inflammation and the pain and stuff. And I just feel really good, man. I'm loading up my knee like I've never loaded it before, like basically to explode off of it. In like the last like 12 years, I don't think I've been able to do that. So I feel great. So I don't plan on putting down the gloves, you know. I still feel good, man. I still want to see what I got.
How has, and you mentioned it, like, you know, you have all natural supplement, all that. How has stuff changed since when you even first got into the UFC in terms of being able to recover and take care of your body and the supplements and the, I walked through the UFC building here in Vegas, and just the technology that they have for fighters is next level, something I didn't see 10 years ago. How much does that help you keep your body and get your body back, especially after the injury, to where it needs to be, where you say, you know what, I still have some good time here. I can still keep going.
Yeah, look at this. This is what I'm dealing with right now. UFC gave me this Normatec. I just unplugged it. Just unplugged on accident. I don't know what happened here, but I got these Normatec sleeves on my leg as I'm sitting here talking to you right now.
Wow.
Courtesy of the UFC, you know, I came out here on a Tuesday to Atlantic City, and I got massaged and I got physical therapy. You know, this is all stuff that the UFC is hooking us up with. Let me tell you, that was not a thing when I first started. There was none of that. You didn't have the UFC PI who sends out these nutritionists to help you with the weight cut. You know, that was all on you. You had to do it on your own. Well, when I was up and coming, obviously you had no money. You couldn't pay anybody. So you had to do everything on your own. You know, you had a buddy who, like, you know, was helping you out, helping you, you know, you're going to the grocery store with him and, you know, eating tuna out of the can and some rice. And no one really had any idea what they were doing. Now you have these experts that are helping you with that, you know, cooking the food for you. They have a chef. I mean, I'm being treated like a freaking real professional athlete these days. You know, it feels great. You know, and my body's somehow been able to stick together even after 30 surgeries. You know,
it seems like, especially for me, I had hair back then. It feels like it was just yesterday, you know, when people were touting you. The hair is still great for you.
But I got gray hair. That's where I was going to go with that. If I don't go skin fade on the sideburns, man, it's bad. It's bad.
No, I remember when you were getting in, or probably after your first fight in the UFC, but people were YouTubing your, you know, it was you and Uriah Hall. It was like, one of these two guys are going to come in, set the division on fire. They're going to be one or two to beat Anderson Silva. You obviously got there faster than Uriah Hall, even though you had the crazy highlight reel kick and everything going on. But you guys came out of the same area and everything. Feels like yesterday. Does it feel like that time just went by in a blink for you from beating Anderson Silva to now?
Giving me the chills, just, you know, giving me that little flashback and reminiscing. So Uriah Hall, funny you mentioned that name. It's funny how MMA's changed because as a up and coming fighter now, you don't ever fight the best guys anymore. You try to find the worst guys to fight. You try to keep an undefeated record as long as possible, and then you try to get into the UFC, right? Then you have your first tough fight there. Back in the day, man, this is 2009. It was about fighting the best guys immediately. And we're talking about for no money. So funny enough, in my third fight, I fought Uriah Hall. We were the two top prospects in the country. I mean, even on the websites back then, there was a few websites that did prospect picks and all this stuff. Me and him were like one and two. And he was from a school at the time called Tiger Shomen, which they had like, I think they had like 40 locations at the time. It's probably way past that now. And I was at Cerro Longo. And there was kind of a rivalry between the Cerro Longo team and the Tiger Showman guys because when we did kickboxing fight, they were out of New York for the most part and Jersey and stuff. So anytime we had fighters fighting kickboxing or if we had fighters, fighting MMA, it was the crowds were really mostly either our team or their team. And we were very rowdy and they probably had more numbers than us. So we had to like be even more rowdy to kind of like deal with their numbers. So there was kind of like a rivalry there. So when all of a sudden you had me who, the Cerro Longo guys and everybody around me were saying, I was the guy who's going to be the best and had all this potential. And then you had everybody from Tiger Showman screaming and yelling about how this guy's ridiculous and he can knock anybody out. It was a big fight. And that was right here in Atlantic City. And I ended up knocking him out in the first round with a left hook. And that was always like whoever wins that fight is going to go to the UFC. And Uriah Hall ended up finding his own way to the UFC and had a great career himself. But he went to the Ultimate Fighter show and stuff like that. I went straight in after being 4-0. Yeah, but it's kind of crazy, man, this road I've been on. I'm super blessed. I had a great time throughout my whole UFC career. I just feel very blessed. I accomplished a lot. I became a world champion. I defended the belt 3 times. But I still have more. I still have more. I feel like even with everything I've done, I think the only fight I really was able to show my true potential, and it wasn't everything, but it was a lot, was my Mark Munoz fight. Another fight I loved was my Lyoto Machida fight. I think I showed a lot in that fight because it was 5 rounds, and then there was definitely some moments where it got scary for me in there too, and I had to battle back. So the whole road in the UFC from the wins to the losses, it's been great.
I'm always interested, especially, when people are this accomplished in the UFC, because there's a difference of never becoming a champion and kind of staying around and chasing that to having been a champion and still having that fire. It's something that fuels you now, especially is, you have children. You put this forward every fight, like people know your story. Is performing in front of them like a big catalyst of, what? I still want them to see who I am and what I do, because I always wondered how much of that is motivating when you've already been a champion. Like there has to be an underlying thing that still fuels you when, yeah, getting to the belt is fine. You've had the belt. Like, but what's that like new fire? Because there's nothing like something new. I don't care what anyone says. Like there's something that's new to you. What is that inside of you?
Honestly, it's I feel like God really blessed me with a lot, talent and I've developed such skill over these years and I have a lot to offer and I want to be able to show the world and my kids. It's a good question because my kids, man, since they get older, like they really haven't seen me fight and to really remember it, a lot of them, so they're coming to this fight. And I would love to give them a great experience, and to see their dad go out there and shine. They've seen me spar and they've seen my potential. They believe in me. But at the end of the day, like, my last 2 fights, I broke both my legs. In my last 2 fights, one probably I would say is the worst injury ever in the history of the sport, the only compound fracture. And a part of me wants to show them that I still have it. And then also a part of it is like, I love my story. I love everything that I'm coming back from, all the adversity, from everyone thinking, the guy, you just need to retire. You've had 30 surgeries, you had this terrible injury, all the setbacks and everything, and then you come back and they target your legs and beat the crap out of your legs, you break your other leg, like, what the hell are you doing? You got kids, you still have a brain. I can find other ways to make money. Like, what are you doing? All that stuff motivates me. There's so many things that motivate me to get out there. But the one I think the biggest is probably like just unleashing my potential. At some point, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. My body's not going to be where it once was. And right now, I feel great. I just want to be my best self, really. It's never really been about the other guy. It's always about just trying to be my best self in there. And win or lose, I go out there and I just do my best and I like really show everything I got. I'm happy,
How much have you evolved? Because you mentioned it, and as someone who watches and covers the sport like I do, or fans who watch, we watch these like embedded, and we watch the journey. You're putting in so much work in the gym, and you look great, and you look explosive. But then the injury happens. We're like, damn, we're gonna see something special. But an injury, and then another injury happened. So we haven't really been able to see the growth and how much better you've gotten. You do though. You're in the gym. You see this. How much better have you gotten that we haven't even seen the best Chris Weidman over the past couple of years?
That's what bothers me. That's big reason why I want to keep going. I want to show what I got, and I really feel like I haven't been able to do that yet. So that's it, man. I've evolved a lot. I've got way better, really. I think me right now beats me in quote off like in my prime. Like I just think I'm a way better fighter. Like stand up wise, so much better. On the ground, just I'm just way more comfortable and understanding of positions. And then obviously there's some more submissions and just way more, just understand the game way better. Experience is so important. And I got tons of experience and I feel like I still have my body together. So I have what it takes.
No, it's funny to hear you
But
say
but
that.
you're right. I gotta actually show it
No,
in the cage.
that's
Otherwise
great.
it's so dark. So we'll see, man. Like if I'm not able to show it, if I go out there and I'm like man, I'm why am I like then what am I doing? So I gotta show
Yeah, no, it's funny that you say that because as an athlete, you reach these amazing things, and then you look back and realize, like, man, that was just raw athleticism. Like, I was just exploding into things. Like, you might watch fights when you're a champion and be like, it ended this in the first round. If I just would have went for the guillotine, like it's so open. Like there's little things where you might watch back and be like, if I just have my knowledge now, it's a whole different fighter. But yet you were still unstoppable back then. So it's funny to see and reflect on.
And the sport's crazy too because even in fights that I felt really good, I was winning, and then boom, one shot, and that's just our sport kind of too. Our sport is really tough, and then when you lose, that's all people remember, and they're just like, oh, you were champion, now you lost. Now you, what are you doing? You should just stop. But that's not the way I see it. I just see untouched potential still, and think way more to show. And like battling through adversity like this is, I think, great for everybody to see. I think it could be empowering and exciting for anybody to watch it all go down.
A couple more questions, but I you said something to me earlier, and then now it just triggered again with what you just said, is being in that like Cerro Longo gym, it seems like there's just a different level of hunger for everybody that's come through there the past 15 years, whatever, 20, 24, 15, 20 years. Like it seems like everyone is built different. Most people touch gold who come through that gym, but there's just like a quality people can't explain. And then now we see it with like Merab, where people are just like, you can't match his gas tank. You can't match what he, but they could have said that about Aljo 4 years ago. They did. They could have said that about you in 2010. Oh, they did. That same quality, everyone who comes through there has that same quality. What is it about that gym that instills a pace, a tenacity, and a will that doesn't come from anywhere else.
Yeah, well put. I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I don't think it's ever just one. But I would say the first thing, I mean, Longo, Matt Serra. I mean, Matt Serra being the kind of the head mentor to us all, the guy who started it up. He allowed people from Long Island, people from our gym, to realize that we could do it, that you can do it. You become a world champion. So he was really the first one to get going. And then it's Ray Longo, who gets to know you on such a personal level, and he loves you. It's nothing's about the money. Nobody has contracts. There's no, hey, you have to pay this percentage or that percentage. It's he's there. He's only going to work with people. He's only going to work with people that he really likes. And he ends up falling in love with them, and he'll do anything for them. And once he believes in you, you believe in yourself on a whole different level, because he's seen it all. And he's not a bullshitter. So and he knows how to train guys, he knows how to get guys in shape, he knows how to get people mentally in the right spot, and just go out there and fight. And then the other thing is, like, Long Island guys, I don't know, it's such an area that everyone has kind of a chip on their shoulder. You know, there's so much to compete for. Sorry, this freaking TV keeps turning on here.
You're fine.
There's so much competition in everything, man. Every business, you know, from pizzerias to bagel shops to banks or whatever, every job, there's just so many people and so much competition that really you have to fight for everything you get. And so you end up having this hotbed of fighters and hotbed of wrestlers and just tough people. And then Ray Longo's the leader, you know. And you know, I left. I'm in South Carolina now. But
yeah,
my heart and who I am was built there, and they're always gonna be in my corner, you know, forever.
Yeah, it seems that, like, you know, Al Joe's in Vegas now. Marab trains in Vegas most of the time. Like, people leave there, but it's just that quality I was interested in. And, like, you guys take that wherever you go.
And it's loyalty. There's loyalty. Loyalty is key. Very big with us. You know, like, we're not – I mean, I've been with the same coaches. The first gym I ever walked into, first MMA gym, was Sarah's. And wow. Then after doing 3 months of jiu-jitsu, I fell in love with that. I go, okay, Ray Longo. Boom. I was with Ray Longo and Matt Sarah since the beginning. And that's pretty much almost all these guys. You know, Marab came over from Georgia. He came in, he was so raw. I mean, I remember when he first came in. I mean, he would be throwing him, he'd be trying to throw guys, flopping to his back, he's stuck in mount, you know, mistake after mistake. Slowly they were able to kind of garner his craziness and his pace and everything and create the machine that he is today. Like, they really did so much for him. And you know, like, when people are so loyal to you and are willing to put in so much work for you,
yeah,
you're going to just have that same loyalty right back. And there's just a great camaraderie with the guys. Like, you know, I haven't seen, like, Dennis Bazooka's out here, Nas. I haven't seen them in forever, but we see each other. It's like, you know, like, we never missed a day. Same thing when I see Longo and Matt, all these guys. It's, we don't talk all the time. I'm busy as hell with kids and stuff. You know, I train during the day, and then it's just kids sports after kids sports, and I'm just very focused on family and what I have to do. But when we see each other, it's right back to bull busting and having each other's back at the end of the day, and it's just a great crew.
I love that. You know, that balance is key, and you know, we all truly look forward to seeing the new version of Chris Weidman this weekend. When you visualize it, when you think about it, now that you're prepared and it's just a couple of days away, when you sit down, how is it going to go this weekend? How do you see it playing out this weekend? And I got to put you on the spot. When you win, you're going to keep going, right? It's not going to be a rocky moment like, hey, I did it, I won, here's the gloves. Like, we're going to see more.
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to go out there and, like I said, just leave it all out there and give my best version, in the cage. And if that is the case, I think I really showcase my skills and I make it look easy out there. Then we'll see what's next.
No, I love it. We can't wait. Again, you're fresh. If there's anything in MMA, you're fresh and ready to go.
I'm ready to go. Look at that baby face.
You're gonna leave the octagon just like that this weekend, man. I can't
that'll
wait.
Be a blessing. Yeah, I'm going on a vacation with my family right afterwards. I don't want to be limping. I want to be clean and still ripped from, you know, being in shape and enjoy my vacation with no injuries. So let's go, God willing.
Yes. Can't wait to watch. Everyone, Chris Rydman joining us today. Amazing interview. Amazing fighter. Thank you, Chris, man. Can't wait to watch this weekend.
Thank you, man. It was a great interview. You're the man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you. On the